Welcome to CVM Stories, the podcast on customer value management. Together, we explore how companies can be more successful and the customers happier through the use of latest customer value management techniques. Learn key commercial and analytical insights from telecoms, retail, finance, and other industries that drive CVM forward. Welcome to another episode of CVM Stories, your gateway to customer value management and data-driven marketing in telecoms. I am Šarūnas, your host. Today, we have a very special guest, Florian Schwartz, who is program lead for data-driven marketing at A1 Telekom Austria. Florian has been at the forefront of customer value management and data-driven marketing for over a decade. In this episode, we will touch on several very important topics, such as customer centricity, churn, use of AI and ML in customer value management, KPIs, as well as experimentation. So, let's dive in. CVM Stories is produced by Exacaster. We help companies take their customer value management to the next level. To stay updated on our latest episodes, subscribe to the podcast or sign up for an email newsletter at exacaster.com/CVM Stories. Florian, welcome to Vilnius. Welcome to CVM Stories. Very nice to have you here.
Hello, thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, so I know you come from Austria and A1. Could you describe for the listeners a little bit more about your role? What do you do?
So I'm, as you said, in A1 Austria, A1 Telekom Austria, which is part of Telekom Austria Group, a group of companies working in Central Eastern Europe. I'm in Telekom Austria responsible for data-driven marketing.
Okay, so very, very modern, very cutting-edge occupation.
Well, it's definitely interesting with a lot of learning, but also a lot of things where we see it doesn't work as we initially thought it would work. So experimentation has become part of, I would call it, the DNA of what we're doing here.
Yeah. Okay, very nice. Before we go into a lot more detail on that, can you describe for listeners, how did you end up in this role? So, I mean, data-driven marketing and marketing itself, did you study it at school? How your career progressed?
Well, I think I can say marketing is in my heart.
Okay.
I studied international marketing before A1, I worked in automotive industry, had a short trip to consulting business. And for quite a while, I've been in Telekom Austria Group in different marketing roles. So I came originally from the product marketing side, was doing portfolios, portfolio design, tariffs. Then I was heading marketing in our Macedonian subsidiary in Skopje for 4 years. In that role was very interesting overall because we had so many things introduced at that time. When I came there, the company was only 4 years old, so pretty greenfield, and the main theme we were working on was growth.
Yeah.
So when I joined it there, CVM or customer base management, well, it started to exist, let's call it like that.
When you were studying marketing, was there any talk or thinking about such things as customer value management, customer base management?
A little bit. But I would say it's an often neglected topic, especially at that time when I was studying marketing. Digital marketing was not yet a topic, so customer data was not so easily available, and there were only a handful of industries with subscription services where there was some data that you could use for proper CVM,
I would say. Okay, so could you describe maybe your feeling when you come into a head of marketing role in Macedonia?
Of course.
What are you trying to do? So maybe someone is coming into this role today, watching this episode. What did it feel like, and what did you actually do? What were the first things?
Now, actually, for me, it was quite interesting because I moved from the largest of our operations in Austria to our smallest in Macedonia. Also from our oldest operation that used to be a state monopolist years ago to an operation that was only 4 years old.
So the whole structure. Huge difference.
Huge difference. The people, I moved there when I was 31 and I was older than the average employee. Imagine. And also the structures that were there in Austria. I had a whole team of 20 people doing, I don't know, one topic, whereas in Macedonia, I had half a person doing it.
So like everything is now all of a sudden hands-on. Yeah.
Much more hands-on. Yeah. And talking about CVM again, in Austria at that time there was, I cannot tell you how many, but more than 20, 30 people working in customer value management. And in Macedonia when I joined there, it was one or two persons.
So in a sense, it was kind of easy for you to bring a lot more experience, a lot more know-how from the bigger market. But could you tell us what were the surprises that you encountered where you had to change your approach?
It was to I could bring topics from the big operation to Macedonia, but I would say I could equally bring things back where we as Austrian operation could learn a lot, especially when it comes to fast implementation of things or finding workarounds when you don't have the means to do it 150%.
Yeah.
What I could definitely bring in is more experience into the topic of base management, because in Austria already at that time we had a big base to deal with, whereas we didn't have that in Macedonia at that time.
So was this something like one of the new topics that you immediately started working on?
It was one of the first topics I started working on, because already when I joined it was visible that the inflow of new customers could not so easily totally overcompensate churn that started at, this time.
Isn't it amazing to even imagine a situation that there is an operator who is not paying attention to the outflow? But it was actually the case in many, many companies. As recently, maybe as 5 years ago, there were still operators struggling with this.
I find it normal and reasonable. Yeah. At that time, when I joined, at that time it was VIP in Macedonia, I think it was reasonable to be like that. Because you have limited resources, you have limited manpower, and you have to prioritize. And at the time when our market share was still low, highest priority was to get in new customers.
Yeah.
But of course, what is most important, and that's a topic that I'm dealing with at the moment as well, to find when is the right moment for a change. When you feel it, it might be too late already.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that's a very interesting topic you bring in. Could you describe the moment where you realize that CVM has a chance to create big value? Like, do you remember the day or the situation, like, I don't know, looking at some charts and saying, oh my God, we have to fix this? Or was this more of like a gradual growing of awareness?
I think it was a gradual process when I realized what we are doing, like the activities we do in base management. And at the same time, I did see the numbers, like a slight increase in churn. And also when you reach a certain size, you become more visible to competition, and they react to your market moves more.
Yeah.
And when, of course, they react and make more aggressive promotions, I see the impact on the gross side. And at the same time, churn is not getting down again. And then I have to start bothering about it.
So did you think of a business case where you said, okay, I want to fix this problem, I need some people to work on this? Or did you just start doing it straight away? So did you expect some impact? Did you calculate it?
To be frank, I don't remember anymore whether we calculated it. Probably the finance guys have asked for something. But I was pretty convinced because I've seen the same development in more major operations before. So it was obvious that at some time
this would be needed.
It was not a question. And I think any company that has customer data and has reached a certain level of maturity has to do proper base management.
How would you describe CVM importance today in many of the markets with the base very much mature?
You're talking about telco?
About telco, yeah.
Cannot be overestimated, right? Because we are becoming more and more commoditized. The market is not growing. We are mostly working in geographically defined markets. So there is a limit, an upper limit of the market. You cannot convert any non-users to users anymore for our core services. So in the end, it's totally key to keep and develop your base.
So kind of the marketing focus that was always on acquisition has basically completely transformed over the years, and now it's all about the bass.
It should be, but it's often not the case, yeah. Because I think in still many heads, and sometimes I would not exclude myself, we think about marketing as making a nice TV advertising, creating a new product and so on. It's the more known tool and maybe the easier to understand tool than mm-hmm. doing the nitty-gritty of proper bass management.
Yeah. I have several questions about the older days, let's mm-hmm. say. I think still we see telecom struggling with churn problem. Mm-hmm. So if you are today coming into a marketing head position and the company has a churn problem, what would you actually do? Like top five things just solving this problem?
Most important for me would be to understand the churn reasons. Mm-hmm. I mean, sounds easy, but...
not easy.
to do a proper analysis yeah. and understand the main drivers mm-hmm. and what can I do against it? Is it that competition has better offers? Is it that the customers are not satisfied with my performance? We are at the moment working quite a bit with the topic. What is the customer expectation mm-hmm. and what do I deliver? Mm-hmm. Maybe to give an example here. If you have a network or if you have a product that should deliver 100 megabit, mm-hmm. It makes a difference whether the customer is watching TV on five screens mm-hmm. at the same time mm-hmm. or the customer is just reading the news. So if our line then in the end doesn't deliver 100 megabits, but let's say 80,
yeah.
maybe the customer that reads the news has no problem.
Yeah.
Whereas the customer that watches TV does have a problem. Mm-hmm. So I would have to understand that. And I would say really look into the data, ask the customer on one side, mm-hmm. but on the other hand, look into the data that you have. What can you see? What are the reasons? One thing that is maybe not new is churn prediction models. Still, for me, the classical churn prediction models are one level too generic still, and I would go one level deeper if I have the data available.
Mm-hmm. I think this is kind of churn is a classical customer value management problem, and once you touch it, the whole Pandora box opens because you started from data. And it's actually quite hard to get all of the data that you want around the customers.
Absolutely.
So kind of you immediately hit the first bottlenecks and you can assess is this high quality situation you're having in terms of customer data or not. So I think that's a very, very good thing that you kind of highlighted this. And I think it really shows the importance of analysis first in customer value management.
Another thing I would definitely look at... Mm-hmm. At least in one of my steps in Macedonia, this was a quite big problem, is a rotational churn as well.
Mm-hmm. Could you define what it is?
Mm-hmm. It is when a customer quits a contract just to sign up a new contract with okay. you again at, well, better conditions for the customer, worse conditions for us as operator. Uh-huh. On one hand, customers can do it by themselves if your promotions are designed in a way that new customers are treated much better. But there's also another source, which we then found out is your own agents kind of abusing the system mm-hmm. because it's designed in a way that for them it's an advantage to sell a new contract. They get full provisions, whereas to keep an existing customer has less incentive for them.
Yeah. So kind of there is... several possible sources, either the customer or even could be your sales channel earning the commissions, but not,
can be the
not really
of your portfolio,
bringing in.
Can be the yeah. sales channel, can be the yeah. customer yeah. himself. So couple of sources.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think that's a very annoying problem to have, I would say. And then in terms of fixing, so I think the incentives, yeah, we can understand how to fix that. But then what are the easy fixes and what are the hard fixes that you have seen?
For churn, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, an easy fix, but an expensive fix is the whole concept around LMD, last minute defense and mm-hmm. saves.
What does that, mm-hmm. how does that work?
Mm-hmm. It means when a customer wants to quit, you give them special offers, better offers, everything almost. In the end, yes, you can often keep the customer, but on the other hand, it costs you money and it's not very exact sometimes.
Very late. Okay, so that's one.
Maybe here a little detail about when I introduced this system in Macedonia. People learn about how these mechanisms work. And here again, you could have customers kind of abusing it, but also, again, your agents, like telling the customer, well, tell me you want to quit and I can give you a better offer.
Yeah.
So what we introduced at that time was a randomizing element in the system that out of 100 customers, only 90 would get a last-minute defense offer.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And it was unpredictable which ones wouldn't. And this was saved with the customer. So it wouldn't help that you open it several times and at some time you get it.
Yeah.
What was the intention behind for the agents to make it unpredictable so that they would not promise to the customer, say you want to quit and I can give you a better offer because they wouldn't know whether they can.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you basically had like centralized control over this discount set and then...
For this element, I mean, I think you cannot fully centralize saves and last minute defense, but I mean, it depends on the creativity of your agents, depends on several factors whether it pays off to do that.
Yeah, I think it's a very nice way you describe this process. It's a quite common tactic, still widely used, I would say, probably by every subscription company.
We do use it and it makes sense, but ideally, and now that's the more complex thing, to already catch these customers one stage before that.
Yeah. I think it's a very nice way of thinking, okay, well, we have plugged the hole, maybe the water stopped coming in or stopped leaking. Now, how do we start preventing churn?
Exactly. And I think so, then we get to the concept of a customer journey.
Yeah.
And to analyze the certain, the different stages of the customer journey and maybe at an earlier stage, find out where do we lose the customers.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a problem with, as we said before, with the tariffs? Is it a problem with the service levels and
on
and so forth?
So I think, that's a very, very nice way of kind of gradually arriving to where we are today with customer value management, right? So you start to look earlier and earlier all the way to onboarding. And then before even onboarding, why are we even acquiring these bad customers that we can't serve? And pretty soon you have what is kind of state-of-the-art customer value management.
And you remember before I said that churn prediction models, some of them are a bit too basic.
Yeah.
Maybe one example here, I would suppose the most important factor of a churn prediction model often is the contract binding.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's it's important, but it's a no-brainer that churn goes up when
the contract
expires.
Okay, so I think very, very, very nice. So that kind of describes us, gives us the longer-term perspective of how we arrived where we are today. Maybe you can describe how does customer value management feel today in Austria or in other markets that you have seen. How does this work now?
It feels more complex.
Mm-hmm.
It feels more sophisticated. And what is most important, and that's hard to implement, customer value management used to be a separate function, like classical telco setup was. You have the product guys and you have customer value management as a separate unit. But I believe these silos need to open up more and more.
Mm-hmm.
Like it doesn't work anymore so well that you define a product for new customers, throw it over the fence, and then customer value management deals with the base to sell it to the base and so on and so forth. I think the first big change was the rise of digital channels.
Mm-hmm.
So you have different ways how to reach your customers, and you cannot separate so much anymore. Is this an existing customer? Is this a new customer? Both use our app, both use our website, our self-care tools, and so on and so forth. So definitely here we have a much wider set of customer contacts.
So kind of the concept of the product becomes a bit more blurry because there's channels that are being constantly used, but maybe there is no product that has been bought yet, but you are already in the contact with the customer. So I think that's
yes,
that's
and the whole digital sales funnel, yeah, like from a unknown to a known but not fully known non-customer, customer, and so on and so forth. So it's not it's like there's not a red line like in the past. It's not non-customer versus customer.
So yeah, I think this is a really nice kind of example of change that happened over the years and really start to mix things up. Maybe you can tell a little bit also about the product marketing aspect of it, because many operators organize around products. Maybe it is postpaid residential with contracts or maybe prepaid. And historically, it worked. So what were the good things of this setup and what are the challenges now?
You said historically it worked. I would even say it still works.
Yeah.
But there again, we're at the topic that I mentioned before. We might reach the point when you don't yet feel it, but it's time for adapting things. And why I believe it has to be adapted if you want to be competitive in the future is that the products as such, the classical telco products, become more and more exchangeable and more commodities. Like when I started working in telco, you could make a difference with on-net minutes, off-net minutes, how many SMSs, how much data, do you include data or not, what phones out of the 200 available on the market. So it made a lot of difference, whether it was tariffs with included minutes or with pay-per-use and so on. But where are we now? I mean, we have unlimited minutes. We have unlimited, well, SMS doesn't matter at all anymore. We have data also reaching close to unlimited amounts. Devices, we see the importance of devices gradually decreasing. Why? I mean, look at your phone, look at your previous phone. It looks the same. It does the same. Maybe the biggest difference is that the battery works better. Like we become more a commodity. Of course, we need to make sure that there are differences, but the levers are less. So I believe that gradually the importance of how to treat the customer and how to offer things while they are a customer grows. That's why I believe it's not like anymore the product, or it should be not anymore the product and then customer happy for the next years, but that you enter with the product and then you have you kind of complete your product during the usage. Try and buy, you offer add-on quantities, small upgrades here and there, and that's why it's not a dichotomous approach anymore. Even if it still works, return back. Because I think the pain only gradually starts now.
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting angle that you bring. And if we take like the classical product attributes of like product itself, so it's the same, as you said, the pricing, same or even no room, and then promotions, everybody's doing the same thing. And the distribution is done the same way or very similarly. You have pretty much exhausted the classical elements of the product and you now need to introduce something else. And that's kind of the key challenge.
I mean, we're still trying also in Evon to find these elements on the product side as well.
And it should probably never end.
So to add, for example, security services. That's a topic that is very close to telco services that does work. We have been traditionally famous for best network, which we do emphasize, which we do play on. But also here, people use Wi-Fi at home and so on. So best network is not like in the past anymore, the antennas, but sometimes even the Wi-Fi. So what we're doing here is Wi-Fi mesh systems for home. And here again, we're entering into what I said. Maybe you cannot sell all of this at first. Maybe you first sell a connection and then with your analytics, you find out this customer has an issue with Wi-Fi coverage. So all of my network perception goes down if I don't
because
offer a solution.
Of something to that. At home.
Exactly. I don't really control it, but I should know as an operator.
Yeah.
So these things are kind of more and more growing into each other.
Mm-hmm. So we are much more complex environment in terms of the product features as well. Super complex.
With this, you kind of answered your question about what is the benefit of this old system.
Yeah.
It's simpler.
Yeah.
You have clear task here, clear task there, KPI gross set, KPI whatever, churn or base revenue development.
Easy.
Relatively easy to manage.
Yeah. So could you describe then the situations where you start feeling that this is no longer working? Maybe in your own work or maybe in relation to channels or other parts?
Here again, I can say it's a gradual thing. Mm-hmm. And I mostly realized that in my current role with data-driven marketing, mm-hmm. What do we want to do is to sell the product that has the most, where the customer has most affinity mm-hmm. and that delivers the highest value for a one at any point of time. So mm-hmm. I would analyze that all the time. Yeah. But if I have like this classical product approach, mm-hmm. like I want to sell as many products as possible, I have a collision here of goals. I cannot, I know that this would be the best to sell to the customer, but I have the goals on something else. And that's what is being pushed through. Or when we're talking about how to develop the base, it might have an opposed effect if the product development runs into a different direction.
Mm-hmm. So sort of the data-driven aspect is by design looking from a customer point of view almost.
Has to.
And then you end up with the rest of the organization has not caught up to this perspective yet.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. We are working on that in a one group, mm-hmm. But it's not an easy transformation because
I
the whole target setting would have to adapt. Also, as management, you lose certain influence on decisions. Mm-hmm. If you can relatively easily steer sales of a certain product, mm-hmm. but it already gets a bit more complex if you want to put the customer in the center and say, I want revenue to be the guiding principle here, or customer lifetime value. I mean, it's
even
a wonderful concept,
yeah.
but who can exactly measure customer lifetime value?
Yeah. So kind of translating the high level goals into medium, intermediate goals, it becomes.
And especially to break this down to goals for very operationalized goals for the agents on the front line.
Yeah.
Because they understand a sale.
Yeah.
Or they understand one transaction.
Yeah.
But to how to explain to them, in this case, it's better not to sell anything because it long-term increases the value of this customer.
Yeah. Could you describe the role of next best offer in this situation?
Yeah.
Is it helpful?
Tough question.
Yeah.
In theory, it is. Mm-hmm. But here again, it depends a lot on how you define it. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Because next best offer could be very short term or could be long term. So mm-hmm. I wouldn't
it
say
it still doesn't solve the whole problem.
No,
basically.
It doesn't fully solve it.
Yeah.
And even next best offer can be not super customer centric mm-hmm. because when we return to the concept of customer lifetime value, it might be that the next best action is something that doesn't generate any short term value.
Yeah.
But overall, still, I mean, let's not lie about it. It's a cool concept, just you need to manage it properly.
Mm-hmm. So kind of opens the door to a better approach,
yes.
But you still need to be careful that you execute it with all the nuances looking at the longer term value.
But my mm-hmm. experience, it should be a combination of algorithms and management decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Like I started with the approach to have a next best offer only defined by algorithms,
mm-hmm.
Which is maybe better than having a next best offer just
by chance or by decisions.
Yes. But it doesn't depict the full picture.
Mm-hmm.
So I can make an algorithm decide this has the highest probability for the customer to take. This generates the highest value as the next decision.
Mm-hmm.
But the algorithm has a hard time to predict things in the longer term. So
mm-hmm.
what value should, or how should I quantify it if the next best action is just to tell the customer, thank you for being our customer for long term. Do you have any problems with us?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it doesn't deliver any value right now, but
yeah.
maybe it would be the next best step with a customer that is not fully satisfied. You know mm-hmm. it by, I don't know, by NPS, for example.
Yeah.
To just ask them something.
Yeah. So not very easily incorporatable into algorithms in this case.
You can, but the question is, or maybe you can. I'm not sure whether you can, but maybe you can. But the question is, does the investment into portraying everything in an algorithm pay off?
Mm-hmm.
Because at some time you reach like Frankenstein algorithms that nobody understands anymore.
Yeah. So I think this brings us to the point of the use of algorithms mm-hmm. in customer value management. So I know you have been doing this for the past many years. Could you share us what were the learnings from this? What would be the tips for someone just mm-hmm. maybe at the beginning of this journey?
Maybe first tip would be if you're in a telco, make sure your data is correct. Okay. It's a challenge. All of us have legacy systems. If you're not a greenfield from the last 5 years, you have legacy systems, data on different sources with different formats and so on and so forth. To bring these together to be more or less comparable and more or less with the same timestamp and so on and so forth
mm-hmm.
is key, because if the data is wrong, your algorithms will just give you funny decisions and mm-hmm. you wouldn't know why.
Yeah. How big of a effort is that?
It's a huge effort.
Months, half a year, years. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Like we built up like a customer 360 data lake, all of that, and that's years of projects.
Mm-hmm.
And also to bring this to state-of-the-art infrastructure, we are about to move these things into the cloud, not to have everything on-premise, to be more scalable and so on and so forth.
A big effort there just to get the basic inputs correct.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because seriously, if you start with the algorithms, like I'm talking now about algorithms for next best offers or mm-hmm. For offers that you make to a base, yeah. If the data is not correct and the algorithm gives you wrong suggestions, you lose buy-in of the whole organization.
Mm-hmm.
They will tell you, like, what you're doing here delivers worse results than we used to have before.
Mm-hmm.
Why should we?
Yeah. Okay. So that's first tip. Make sure the data is prepared, it's clean.
Make sure the data
is good as
clean.
Possible.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Second tip would be check with your management how far they want to go and what mm-hmm. is their perspective. You can do certain things bottom up. You can go to a certain extent. But in the end, it depends on management how much liberty they give you to use algorithms.
Mm-hmm. So maybe you can explain a little bit.
Can give you a very simple example.
Yeah?
Suppose now you use a system that suggests the next best offer. That, of course, collides to a certain extent if management wants to say, in next month, I want that many gross sets or that many sales of a certain product.
Mm-hmm. The algorithm is contradicting that, basically.
Algorithm is contradicting. So what does the agent do with it?
Yeah.
Does he follow the algorithm like that suggests him something?
Yeah.
Or does he sell what he gets pressure for mm-hmm. from his manager?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of course, you can also to a certain extent integrate this in algorithms, but you need to know upfront.
Yeah, okay. So very, very good tip. Avoid this conflicting signal from the top.
Mm-hmm. Needs to go hand in hand, otherwise mm-hmm. You have confusion in the organization.
Very valuable. What else?
Third tip would be think of what you need to optimize and what is a scarce resource.
Mm-hmm.
If you have an abundance of something, there's not much to optimize.
Mm-hmm.
That's also why in a telco environment, I would say we don't have so many products and we have relatively easy ways how to contact our customers as long as we are allowed to contact them.
Mm-hmm.
And that needs to be reflected in the algorithms, because mm-hmm. the optimization impact for which product to sell is, of course, more limited in such a context than if you have like a retailer, a million of items that you mm-hmm. can sell to the customer.
I think it's a very nice concept of scarcity that you bring to the table. Not many people think about it this way. Could you describe what you think is scarce in the telecom environment?
In the telecom environment, What is cars? Good question. I mean, in our case, definitely the
agent's time, for instance, on the phone is limited, I would say, for me.
Agent's time definitely is scarce. And what I would also say is customers' attention to a certain extent. So what I believe what we need to more take a look at compared to other industries, for example, with this million of references, is the whole time, the timeliness of what to offer when and how to develop that better. Because unlike a retailer, I don't have like this one contact where I can sell, but I have a constant contact with the customer. So it's more like what, when, rather than like a total limitation. I only have one product to sell to the customer.
So it's sort of in a very challenging situation because the scarcity is almost the customer's willingness to buy in a
certain willingness
sense.
And the attention. Yeah. And I think that's a topic which we are maybe underestimating, and we're discussing it a lot in A1 at the moment, is how to stay relevant. Like I have I have many options to contact the customer. I can offer him de facto everything over the 24 months of contract binding. But should I? Or do I lose customers' interest at certain time? So it's not like that I don't have the possibility to contact them, but I do run the risk of customers not paying attention.
Sort of you are in a situation where selling something else can result in the loss of a customer. That's a very strange situation to be.
It can, or that I offer the customer something and he doesn't bother, he doesn't mind, but maybe because of this irrelevant product, the next offer that would be relevant, he just doesn't pay attention to it because he's used to not getting relevant information from us.
Or even maybe selling a small product that ruins the whole perception.
Can be, can be.
It's almost like, you know, enterprise sales where you're saying like every project risks the whole account. Even it's a 1,000 euro project on a 100 million account, it still carries the risk of the full thing. So it's actually requiring very big responsibility.
You're giving a very good analogy with the enterprise market. I believe consumer market is getting more and more things from enterprise market.
Kind of start to make sense.
In the past, we couldn't handle them because of scale.
Yeah.
But at the moment, with all of the tools and all of the data, we can do things for a consumer market that in the past we only could do for enterprise market.
So kind of example, even more attention.
Customer segments, which we always had in the enterprise segment. Also to see at the whole tenure of the customer and so on and so forth. So I believe this is definitely maybe on a smaller scale, but moving to consumer markets where you couldn't do that in the past.
So yeah, I think we touched on some super important tips for algorithmic customer value management. Is there anything else you would like to add?
There is one thing that I would definitely add. Take a look at the role of humans in your organization. Take a look at the role of agents and sales agents, service agents in your organization, and don't underestimate them. The best algorithm does not work if the agents don't see a use in it, if the agents don't like it, if it doesn't support their goals. It's totally different if you're a digital-only company and you only sell through digital channels.
Then you're looking at the UX, UI of the channel and stuff like that.
And you can control it till the end. When you sell through a website and you want, I want to suggest you whatever the new earplugs whatsoever, it's exactly this product. But if there's an agent in between and you suggest earplugs and the agent doesn't like the earplugs, he will still sell you a loudspeaker. And you cannot fully control this. In my opinion, this is, if you have a well-trained team of agents that are empowered, it doesn't work and it shouldn't work. And maybe that's also a learning for us that we had. We underestimated at the beginning when we introduced this system the role of the agent, also the experience, the user experience of our systems for the agents.
Yeah, this is something that is very commonly forgotten, and then you find at your own kind of harm because, oh, the numbers are bad, but you look at the agent system and the recommendation is nowhere to be seen. It's three screens deep. And you have they don't go there.
Exactly, they wouldn't use it.
Okay, very, very nice. So yeah, I think we touched the AI topic as well. Maybe we can circle back a bit to the topic we started at the beginning in terms of measuring customer value management. So measurement is a super important part of large organizations. And what is the current state of CVM KPIs? What is measured? And what do you think about it?
Challenging, because we're moving away from the classical KPIs that we also measured against on the stock exchanges, like revenues, like subscribers.
There is this RGU, you know.
RGU, of course. Yeah.
Revenue generating unit, very impolite way to describe a customer. Yeah.
But I doubt that it will disappear. So,
yeah, it's just part of the financial frameworks. Yeah.
I think we will have to complement these KPIs. So these ones, we will still need them, but we will complement them by, and I separate them into lead and lag indicators. Mm-hmm. Like the lag indicators are usually the ones that are more reliable, but you get them especially for those actions relatively late and too late to steer the business. Mm-hmm. So I think soft indicators become more and more important, such as net promoter score, such as KPIs around the usage of certain things, the
like product usage adoption KPIs.
Exactly, all of that kind of give you indications about what might the customer do next or what causes a potential problem with the customer. Then of course, customer lifetime value, yes, wonderful. I like the concept. I'm still struggling, and if anyone knows, please text me
how to
write to me
how
to solve it. Customer lifetime value is nice, but it's extremely hard to measure because there's so many unknowns over time. Like, how can I define the value of something that a customer might do in 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, it kind of combines two lagging indicators and becomes very, very slow.
No, I mean, especially now, look at the environment now. Yeah. Who would have known 2 years ago the inflation rates
we have
now?
Yeah, like impossible, yeah.
So I think we have to get close to this concept and better around this. But yes, we're still discussing ourselves what we can use here to best determine that. Overall, I mean, I still like as a lead indicator something about customer satisfaction, whether it's a net promoter score or something else, but it gives you a relatively early indication. Is there an issue that could translate into a problem, to a real problem or to bad numbers a year or two later?
And do you measure or incorporate any internal process KPIs? So I don't know, like time to market for a campaign and things like that, just completely from another angle, from the internal efficiency maybe?
We do, but not as hard-coded. But definitely we have more smaller campaigns now, and that's it's key in the whole marketing automation setup that these campaigns can be delivered fast and relatively easy, because otherwise you would need a much bigger workforce, which is hard to incorporate at the moment.
How much of a, let's say, conflict do product KPIs bring into the table versus the customer kind of base management KPIs? Do this clash? And how would you reconcile in the ideal world?
Now, yeah, sometimes they can clash. For example, a product KPI, maximum sellout, could mean massive optimization in the base afterwards. Or also product KPIs refer to the act of selling, and what happens afterwards doesn't matter. So it could lead to extreme costs that I have afterwards in maintaining that, or dissatisfaction later on, just to get a quick time to market on the product side, for example.
So kind of product brings the very outdated, narrow KPI perspective potentially as a risk. Like the acquisition is so important often in products because they're new and they're trying to grow the base, but really it's just a repetition of the whole story. Then look at retention, look at everything else.
In their context, it makes sense. What I believe here is a remedy that you have end-to-end responsibility for a customer segment, that it doesn't help you only to acquire the customer, but you have an interest afterwards also that servicing is at low costs and that you don't optimize your base and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But it's gradually changing, and I see it also in our organization that more and more the awareness grows. That,
mm-hmm. that so you're bringing in this customer segment concept, and I think it's a very, let's say, idealized direction of customer value management, where you're managing certain segments and have responsibility for that. Could you describe some, I don't know, either vision that you have or some companies maybe you follow as role models that you believe are going in the right direction there?
Well, the idea is that we don't have a one-size-fits-all approach anymore. Like in the mm-hmm. early days of telecommunication, I mean, when we were monopolies, it was just one line. Either yeah. you take it or you leave
no
it.
No choice. Yeah.
And afterwards, maybe a portfolio of three tariffs and all good. Yeah. But in the more saturated markets, the needs change and they differ segment by segment.
Mm-hmm.
What I have in mind as an ideal concept is a couple of segments, not too many, and a certain kind of end-to-end responsibility in the organization for these segments.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it could be perfect to have 100 segments with little tiny differences and you can target them perfectly and even go to one-on-one and so on and so forth. But that comes at the price.
Yeah.
You need to maintain it. You need responsibilities for it. And most important, you need to be able to map your base with them.
Yeah.
And here, for me, the ideal is the most sophisticated system of segments I can get that I can still map mm-hmm. with my base data.
Could you give some examples of these segments that you would have in mind?
I mean, the classical and most straightforward are demographic segments,
mm-hmm.
such as youth, such as families, such as whatever, silver ages, mm-hmm. School kids mm-hmm. can be. Ideally, I would go a bit beyond into a bit of behavioral segmentation so mm-hmm. that you bring in, is someone using a service or is someone not using a service? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think this, when you bring in these very like vivid examples, we have seen operators try to launch similar products. Do you think they went far enough? Like there's a price plan for students or something like that, but is this enough to really... Did they do the job fully, or was it just?
I would be careful to give you a clear answer on that mm-hmm. because without knowing the circumstances, I wouldn't know.
Mm-hmm.
I would say there's a trade-off. Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. if you want to have six different portfolios, it might become inefficient for you.
Yeah.
So I think, and that depends on your market and on your organization, the sweet spot might lie somewhere different.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, definitely a portfolio as such is not enough for me.
Yeah.
I mean, just a youth portfolio and then everything else stays the same, in my opinion, doesn't make sense. But maybe where to reach these customers, how to service these customers.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they don't want to come to a shop, or maybe they don't have enough money to buy a new device cash, whereas someone who's 50 years old settled has different needs and different capabilities.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what I would want is that the whole customer journey for a segment is kind of done specifically.
Yeah.
And here, that's why again, I think maybe 3, 4, 5 segments are good enough. Because if you have two different customer journeys for 28 segments, this might be overkill and not be efficient.
Yeah, I think it's recently in another episode, we were talking about channels and how in reality people are used to some channel. And this becomes pretty good. It links to demographics because we all have ideas and understanding that older people are more calling to the call center, going to the shop. Maybe not universal, but still there is more habit of using that channel. And if you look at the young generation, maybe they're using all the digital channels and, I mean, never ever going physically. And then someone in the middle, like myself, maybe using channels like email, which the young generation barely uses, if at all.
I believe,
there's like clear clusters of like population behavior channels that you could use to kind of design those propositions.
Yes, but I would also add the product and proposition specifics.
Mm-hmm.
in my opinion, it makes a big difference whether we're talking about a commodity product like a prepaid SIM card or maybe mm-hmm. even a prepaid eSIM mm-hmm. compared to a fixed line in a household where there is not yet an infrastructure.
Yeah, so that's another huge angle in terms of the whole product specifics and all the capabilities.
Absolutely, and I would suppose even for young generation, mm-hmm. they would like to know when will this agent come? What do I have to prepare? Will they drill holes and so on and so forth? So the level of interaction
is higher.
That also defines different customer journeys here and mm-hmm. different channels that you can use.
So there is a fair amount of room for differentiating these propositions is basically what we're seeing. Mm-hmm.
That's what I meant before. Like mm-hmm. the portfolios as such become more commoditized or the product propositions, but how mm-hmm. how you treat your customers, how you interact with your customers, this will definitely change. And
mm-hmm. yeah, very, very, very interesting. So yeah, I think we dug pretty deep into some super important topics. Maybe a bit on a lighter note before we wrap up. I know you visited Lithuanian sauna recently. Can you compare this to what is the Austrian sauna experience like?
You see, the customer experience definitely is a different one.
So does that give you a good differentiated value proposition?
I believe that sauna providers made a geographical segmentation, like uh-huh. Austrian sauna compared to Lithuanian sauna.
Yeah.
And I think they analyzed that in Lithuania, you have longer winters and more time for sauna.
Oh, so the session is longer.
So the session is longer. But yes, definitely, I think it doesn't do any harm to Austrians to go beyond segmentation every once in a while.
Really
joyful experience.
Okay, happy to hear. Yeah, so I think as we wrap up, we have several traditional questions. So let's begin with the proudest moment. So I know everyone in CVM has this single experience where you really did something that was flying beyond all expectations. Could you share something that you remember from your career, really standing out?
I would maybe refer to something that is relatively recent mm-hmm. And not classical CVM, which was building up our digital experimentation program.
Okay.
Because when I joined in this role, there was one person doing that a bit. Very well with the setting in the setting that this person had. But we built up a new setup. We hired someone who was professor at the university before. We took someone who had a very extensive knowledge in the whole organization and of CVM mm-hmm. and built up here a new framework, educated the organization, made them use it. And what I saw in this last 1.5 years, how experimentation became from something that was kind of for geeks, became business as usual.
And wow. Yeah, that's a very, very important angle to CVM, because many things you have to try on small scale, and you can
exactly
before going big, and it's often forgotten. Yeah.
Yeah. As I said before, for many things we don't know, mm-hmm. It's a big loss of resources if you try out everything on full base. And I mean, we talked about relevance before. Yeah. Of course, you lose customers buying if you try out everything on everyone and there's again something irrelevant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So better do it on a small base.
Did you call it like that, as experimentation program? Because it's the first time I hear that it's communicated straightforward.
Straight wow. digital mm-hmm. experimentation
Very
program.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Super happy. Okay, so then moving on to the biggest embarrassment. So yeah, like we have many cases in CVM where someone does not really realize the full impact they might have, like either big loss in a campaign or something that really backfires. But usually it's a very great learning for the future career. So please, if you could share something educational.
Maybe I will again give you a relatively recent example about this data-driven marketing program. When we rolled out a relatively early version of our recommendation tool to the frontline agents, uh-huh. and it didn't work properly.
Mm-hmm.
And I like got calls all the time, like, this is shit, this doesn't work. Any average agent can do better. Exactly. Emails popping up. Wow. And it really, really took us a long time to get the buy-in back.
Mm-hmm.
And that I think I mentioned it before, to not forget about humans there, and they're not willing to try out something at an early stage if their incentives are totally different. Like, they told me, like, I cannot spend 2 minutes with a tool that doesn't work properly. Mm-hmm. I have targets, I cannot fulfill them.
Yeah.
Then we invested a lot of time into the whole user experience of the tool. We had a lot of discussion with them. What do you need in? What does not work for you? Based on that, we improved the whole mm-hmm. thing and relaunched it half a year or so later. Mm-hmm.
So, and kind of the fixing process was really long and hard, and took a lot of feedback to get them involved.
The fixing process, mm-hmm. and I would say the fixing process is still easier to fix mm-hmm. than the trust in the system.
Yeah.
Once you ruin the trust in the system, it takes you so long to regain that mm-hmm. again.
So, like, experimentation in the agent channels in shops is maybe not very good idea. You have to do
there
super
limited,
small case
there
scale.
Are limitations. Yeah. And I must tell you, we even tried with a friendly user group, but
it didn't capture everything.
It didn't capture everything because mm-hmm. some errors just came up when we had massive rollout. The friendly users were friendly, so they were more kind of, I want to try this out anyway. There we really had to step back and
mm-hmm.
did do a lot of communication incentives again to get their buy-in back.
Yeah, so kind of rolling out in real sales channels is a very, very responsible moment. Check 10 times with visa learning. Yeah.
And overall, not to forget the human element.
Mm-hmm.
I just have to underline it once again. We are very tempted now, algorithms do everything, data does everything, and so on and so forth. As long as there's humans in the value chain,
everywhere still, yeah, very, very, very good example. Thank you for sharing.
Welcome.
In terms of educational resources that have been inspiring for you, maybe you could share a book recommendation or a podcast or something that you're listening to, you're using, for someone who wants to know more about this topic.
Nothing specific that I would recommend you. Mm-hmm. I'm following a couple of LinkedIn posts, but not that there's one channel where I would say this is it. So I'm reading a lot.
Everywhere, widely, basically.
Maybe one thing that in the German markets is very interesting is a magazine called Brand 1,
mm-hmm.
Which brings in a lot of creative approaches around marketing, around customers. This definitely is an inspiration, but it's not like that there's one podcast or so that I can recommend.
Yeah, thank you very much. So Florian, it has been a great pleasure to have you here. I think lots of useful tips, and
you're welcome.
See you in future
thanks
episodes,
for the talks.
Thank you for listening to CVM Stories. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a review. You can also ask us a question about a particular customer value management challenge you have at work. We will happily ask our experts to tackle your challenge in a future episode.